going to be talking with you on Gospel Tangents.
Violin music by Becca Greenouch.
Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Joseph Smith said his name would be had for good and evil among the entire world. Boy, was he right. Is the truth somewhere in the middle? Dr. Larry Foster will tell what he thinks that both critics and apologists of Joseph Smith get wrong when they talk about the prophet. So this is going to be a very fun conversation. You won't want to miss it. Check out our conversation.
I was in the middle of a very polemical comment, so let me just backtrack just slightly and say this. I think that one thing that needs to be emphasized, and I know Michael Quinn has been very concerned about the Mormon Church not being more candid on some of this stuff as early as they should have been, and then young people who've been taught one thing then tend to sort of think that the Mormon Church doesn't know what it's talking about or give up on the Mormon Church just because they find something out that's different from what they've been taught. I think it seems clear to me after more than 40 years of studying Joseph Smith, among a number of other things, that one has to separate behavior of a prophet from the teachings of the prophet. And Brigham Young himself said that he didn't care if Joseph Smith did all sorts of terrible things, but he was still a prophet of God and so forth and so on. And that's what was important to him. That was in the Journal of Discourses, by the way. I'm not quoting him at all, but I'm just the general gist of it. And prophets often do a little bit of excess in various ways, including sexually. But I say it should not necessarily be viewed as discrediting their larger teachings. Let's take a case that's not religious. Isaac Newton. Isaac Newton was a really weird character.
Oh, really?
Really weird character. He was also absolutely brilliant, and he developed all sorts of ideas about celestial mechanics and how the world works, and he was a man who was unparalleled genius. That doesn't have anything to do with the validity or lack of validity of his views of celestial mechanics, is what I was saying.
Okay.
And I think that we would be well not to assume that one possible defect of a prophetic leader, if that's what it was, a defect, necessarily discounts the positive accomplishments that they've made. Right now, we've just had a devastating blockbuster set of revelations on Martin Luther King Jr.'s much wider than we had expected sexual life. And it really is painful for many of us who highly regarded him, but he still is a great man. He did some very important things, even if he had feet of clay in one area. And I think Latter-day Saints probably need to be, if they're serious about understanding Joseph Smith, need to be aware that there is this problem with his behavior toward the end of his life. He seems to be, some of it is organized and some of it can be explained, but it's very hard ultimately. You know, in section 132, he reports God something to the effect that God forgives him for any sins he might have committed or might commit in the future. That's a pretty broad thing. I wanted to find a way to explain how I thought Joseph Smith must have had an explanation for what he was doing. He was so concerned about having a way to explain what he was doing that he must have had an explanation. So I've been working for 40 years trying to figure out that explanation. And I'm almost to the point of wondering whether ultimately, even he couldn't explain what he was doing. and justify what he was doing. But I have come up with some justifications. Okay, there's at least three factors. One is the section 132 on plural and celestial marriage makes clear that all existing covenants are voided in the afterlife. This is unless they are sealed under the authority of the Mormon Church. So from this context, at least if they were Mormon, I guess you could say, well, existing marriage covenants might have been, there was a lot of shifting in Nauvoo of marriages that was authorized, I think, by the Mormon Church. So, and so, and related to that is the argument that Brigham, there's a speech from Brigham Young in the about 1860, I think, maybe it was the late 50s, early 60s, where he says that if a woman wanted to move up in the hierarchy, she could move up in the hierarchy if it was all right with her first husband and with the person she wanted to move up into the hierarchy to without getting a divorce. That would
Yes.
So that would help to explain some of the cases, maybe that Brian Hales thinks were sequential. That is, for example, let's see, who would of his 12 apostles, there was Parley Pratt's wife was one that was is sealed to Joseph Smith, but it's also to Parley Pratt.
Oh, that's right.
And then there's another woman. Orson Hyde. Orson Hyde's wife seems to be sealed to Joseph Smith for eternity. And Hyde was away on a mission at that point in the Holy Land for a long time and apparently didn't know about it in advance and was very upset. But according to the accounts that both Brian Hales and George Smith present, there was a sort of alternative worked out, and Orson Hyde got to marry some other women, apparently, to compensate him. maybe. Look, there's so many different arguments about these things when they've gotten, it's just that you cannot positively say what the evidence shows. But it does seem, Brian Hales even seems to seem to think that that this was a case of a sequential thing where she went to Joseph Smith officially. But to me, it would be shocking anyhow even if there wasn't sex in this life, to be losing your wife in the afterlife.
Yeah.
That would be almost as bad as you know, losing her in this life. I mean, that would be for eternity that you're losing her, you know, that sort of thing. So honestly, I just can't. I'm working on an attempt to present the best argument I can. The problem with Michael Quinn's work is he doesn't give explanations for it. He just says what he thinks happens, and he's very good on that. But we have to go beyond that. So, for example, Michael Quinn wrote an excellent piece on the succession crisis and the claimants for the succession, you know, six or so major claimants for the succession after Joseph Smith's death. And he's absolutely correct on this. But he doesn't make the larger connection, which is this is almost every possible type of succession scenario you can imagine for any prophet. So there's the family successor, there's the charismatic successor, there's the institutional successor, there's you know, there's a variety of different things. If it was put in that larger theoretical framework, then you'd see that it all makes sense in a larger context than just as a series of bits of information that are connected with a brilliant reconstruction of what. And I'm trying to do that with his work on Joseph Smith's sexual practices so that it could be absorbed by reasonably open Latter-day Saints without causing vast amounts of psychic distress.
It's a tough topic.
It's a very tough topic. And I think Gary Bergero is another very sharp guy, unbelievably knowledgeable on all of this. And his book on the conflict in the quorum about the relationships between Brigham Young, Orson Pratt, and Joseph Smith, it's masterful, masterful. And it's over polygamy. A lot of it's over polygamy and dissonances of that sort. So even Joseph Smith's closest followers had some difficulty with his behavior, but they were loyal enough that they stuck with him. Other people went the other direction. William Law was convinced that William Law tried in January of 1841, according to his account. He begged Joseph Smith to give up polygamy. That was the only thing he had against Joseph Smith, was polygamy. And Joseph Smith refused to do it. And that was when he was kicked out of the first presidency, and by March was working on organizing a counter Mormon group within the church that eventually led to the Expositor, printing of the Expositor newspaper, and the suppression of the Expositor newspaper, which led to Joseph Smith being arrested and then murdered in Carthage along with his brother Hiram. But that was the only thing. It was the most disruptive aspect of Joseph Smith's experience. And it was really hard for even the people who stayed loyal to him. We know for a fact that he asked several of his followers to give him their wives.
Or daughters.
Or daughters. daughters after that. Yeah. After first wives. And then in the cases we know about, he said, no, I wasn't really wanting her, I was just testing your total loyalty to me. That's a real hard test of total loyalty, and I think not a very diplomatic one, right, if I were doing that. Orson Pratt was convinced that Joseph Smith had propositioned his wife, and he was so distressed that they were afraid that he might have gone down to the river and to commit suicide, and they sent out a search party after him. When he was asked, when Joseph Smith was asking for acknowledgement by his followers that he was behaving properly, do you know anything improper that I've done? Orson Pratt would not say that yes on that. So he was desperate to get him to say. So he said, do you personally know? I said, no, not personally. But that's, it's very hard stuff. But I do think that we can't judge people on just one part of their career. But my personal view is that he probably did engage in behavior that even he could not justify. And he was a very smart man, very smart man. I was convinced he could justify it somehow, but the more I get into it, I'm not sure. Hmm.
I know there's some rumors that at the end of his life he was thinking about renouncing.
Well, that's very interesting, yes. I mean, that's a rational point of view, perhaps, except that he has 30 of his followers who've already taken a plural wife, and he's going to now denounce polygamy and give it up? Well, at another point, he had to promise Emma that he was not going to take any more plural wives. Clayton's journal says that he told Clayton he was not going to follow that. So that was William Marks. William Marks, I believe that William Marks was an absolutely honest man. So I believe that Joseph Smith did come to him and say something like that, whether it's the exact words. That's just a few weeks before he was killed. But murdered. But whether that was just to try and calm things down and buy a little time, there is there's an interesting comment that's quoted in Linda King Newell and Val Avery and Linda King Newell's
Mormon Enigma.
Mormon Enigma, of a man who claimed to have overheard a discussion of this issue in one of the meetings, and said something to the effect that, well, Brigham Young said he may have said that, but we're going to go ahead anyhow, something to that effect, you know. But they couldn't go back. This would have been just catastrophic to have reversed course at that point. That's why I originally thought of manic depression, because I thought when you have those extreme swings of mood, sometimes you come up with a very different end of that from when you were in a depressive state. But I don't know how to make sense of that. I'm still working on it. I'm trying to limit myself to the stuff I feel that I can absolutely support in my written writings. I'm trying to limit it to the stuff I feel I can absolutely support with valid evidence. But I'm not sure that I can give a clean account of Joseph Smith, even if I were to write. I mean, and it wouldn't matter, because whatever I say, people would disagree with it if they didn't want to believe it. Or they would believe it if they wanted to believe it. But there is a point in trying to say as accurately as you can what it is that you think you've found. So I'm still working on that, and I just don't know.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Larry Foster. Our next conversation will be our last with him, and we'll talk about what he thinks about Joseph Smith personally. So if you want to find out what Dr. Foster thinks, please sign up for our free newsletter at gospeltangents.com/newsletter, and I will send you a secret link that will help you to find out what Dr. Foster thinks of Joseph Smith.
And so I think there's something that's very special about Joseph Smith, and there's also some stuff about him that looks like he's manipulative and so forth. So I argue that he was genuinely committed to his religious beliefs and ideals, but that he was also willing to cut corners and even lie or make false statements in order to try to accomplish his goals.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please support Gospel Tangents and become a subscriber. For just $5 a month, go to patreon.com/gospeltangents and you can hear the entire interview. And you can also get transcripts available at either our Amazon website, or if you want to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website at gospeltangents.com and you can click the yellow subscribe button. Of course, we're also on Facebook, Twitter, and all the other places. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And don't forget to click here to subscribe on YouTube, here for a transcript. And over here, we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again for listening.